Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's just starting. Time to get busy.
Wisconsin's own John McCutcheon getting us underway today, as he does every year at this time, for the Route 51 Garden Show. I'm Glenn Moberg, inviting you to join me on our annual sojourn down the well-trodden path to the family garden as we look forward to long summer days and a harvest of homegrown vegetables, tables adorned with fresh-cut flowers, and a yard filled with thriving, healthy trees and ornamental shrubs.
Then you stand right back and you watch it grow. No, even little children gotta do their part in helping to grow in the family garden.
Now, as always, the Route 51 Garden Show is focused on those of us who live in the often inclement climate of the northern half of Wisconsin. And our guests again this year are our two extraordinary master gardeners, Lynn Cain and Nick Schultz. Lynn is an orchard owner who is the vice president of the Wisconsin Master Gardener Association Board of Directors. She writes the Perpetual Gardener column for the Portage County Gazette. That's Nick Schultz. So you can think of this as Larry Mueller's Garden Talk, designed just for those of us who live up north. It's your opportunity to get answers to the questions that you have about trees, shrubs, planting and growing, questions that may be vexing you. We also want to hear your favorite gardening stories about what gardening means to you and your family. And if you have some fresh-from-the-garden recipes to share, we'd like to hear those too. You'll find it easier to get through on this show than on Larry's show with its statewide audience. So call in now. Our lines are open at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. If you've got a question for Master Gardeners Lynn Cain and Nick Schultz, or you can put a question on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Again, this is Garden Talk for those of us who live up north, tailor-made for people who have to deal with a short growing season and a cold, wet spring. Lynn, exactly what is a master gardener?
A master gardener is someone who has taken a course through the extension, the University of Wisconsin Extension. And so it lasts for 12 weeks. You're educated about all aspects of gardening, soil, botany, diseases, insects. And then you take a test and you pass. Then you're required to give 10 hours of continuing ed after that and 24 hours of volunteer service to your community through the Master Gardener program in order to be a certified Master Gardener. So,
and you're the vice president of the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association Board. Tell us about that organization.
That organization has every Master Gardener group is through their county. And each county elects a representative to represent their Master Gardener group. And then those county reps get together and we talk about what's going on throughout the entire state. So we advocate for all the Master Gardener associations. We try to provide them with more information, share resources, things like that. So we're a voice for those groups.
Tell us about your orchard.
We have an orchard which is up in Marinette County, so we're talking probably more Zone 3 even than Zone 4.
Right.
And so it's very cold springs, very cold winters, so the trees have to be able to take it. It was an abandoned orchard that we purchased, so they're heirloom trees. Some of them were damaged beyond us helping them. And so what we've begun doing is grafting parts of those trees onto new rootstock and replanting them to capture the heirloom apples and rejuvenate the orchard.
So, dear listeners, if you've got questions about growing fruit trees, we have an expert here who can help you with those questions. Nick Schultz, you've been interested in gardening your whole life pretty much?
I grew up on a dairy farm, and we had about a quarter-acre garden. So some of my earliest memories were the planting the corms of gladiola bulbs, because those were big enough that little hands could peel and get in the ground. And corn, peas, you know, the big seeds, those were the ones, the little little girls could plant.
So tell us about the Perpetual Gardener column.
The Portage County Gazette is a weekly paper that serves Portage County. I started the column 2003 and runs about every other week. Sometimes less frequently, depending on what's going on. We look at problems and suggestions for perennials and different things that will grow well here.
What have you been writing about recently?
One of the issues that has been identified in the state was a boxwood disease blight. It's a blight that causes plants to turn the leaves of plants to turn brown. Now, boxwood is a shrub that's used to hedge a lot of areas, particularly south of here. Some people use it here, but it's a zone 5, so it's not always hardy here. Here's where it becomes interesting now. Pachysandra is a ground cover that's very common in this area. You'll see it. It's got glossy leaves, big palmate leaves. So if you think of your palm and five fingers coming out, it's that kind of a plant.
Pachysandra.
Yes. Pachysandra. Pachysandra. It's already bloomed. It's an early white flower in spring, and it's a good ground cover. But watch for brown spots on that.
What do people plant this ground cover for?
Mostly to keep their weeds down. That's why most ground covers are planted. I mean, it's
ornamental. Where can
you find it? You can find it at almost any quite frankly, you could find it at most plant sales if your master gardener group is doing a plant sale.
Is this one of these things that people plant around the base of trees?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes, most of them do very well in the shade. So they're, where the grass won't grow, you could put the ground cover and then it gives you a nice – something looks nice around.
So there's
the tree.
A disease that's affecting this. What can people do if they notice their Pachysandra is suddenly starting to wilt and develop these spots?
It's very difficult to get rid of to treat. So your best bet actually is to if you see just a little bit, pick off the leaves, destroy them. Don't compost them. Destroy them. It can be treated, but it's a pretty intensive treatment. You're better off trying to get rid of it to contain it.
Now, last year at this time, we had some alarming news about the emerald ash borer, which had just been found in Stevens Point, was presumably heading north. What's the status of the emerald ash borer this year?
It's been identified in Stevens Point and Wisconsin Rapids and a line generally south of Highway 29. So it's not in Marathon County yet, and it's in just a couple of northern counties. And I'll mention Oneida, Sawyer, Douglas counties. But if you look at a map of the state, and you can go on the Ag Department's website to find this, it really is across the southern half of the state. So the Milwaukee area all the way up Lake Michigan shoreline along the western edge of the state.
Well, that's interesting that it would be in Oneida County, but not in Marathon and Lincoln County. So apparently it's not just moving from a southerly to a northerly direction. It's kind of scattered here and there.
There is a restriction on moving firewood for just this reason. And so if you think of who this is just one possibility. People who perhaps have firewood from the southern part of the state or maybe other states.
They take it to the cabin up north.
They take it to their cabin up north, yes.
And what can the emerald ash borer do to ash trees? They're pretty common.
Yes.
All through northern Wisconsin.
It will kill them. Unless you begin an aggressive treatment, it will kill the trees within 5 to 10 years for sure.
What does this thing look like?
It's a small worm that burrows in. And I believe at the larval stage, it's the most damaging. So it gets under the bark and it basically sucks out the juice of the tree. And
And when it's in the when it's in the beetle stage, it's just a very tiny little emerald colored. That's where the emerald ash borer. And so in you'll find D-shaped boreholes going into your ash tree. That's usually a good signal. Also, if you start looking at your ash tree and you have woodpeckers in the top, they're up there because then you know the larvae are already in there. So you start seeing that die back, you know. And oftentimes, don't be completely alarmed because ash trees tend to get other diseases too. It isn't always the emerald ash borer. But if you start seeing some of that die back, start looking for the little holes. But they're definitely a D shape rather than oval shape or a round shape, which can be other things that are in the tree.
Can you treat your ash trees before they get infected?
Yes.
And what do you do?
Some of the things, there's what we call bare tree and shrub. That's a product you buy at any of the common stores. You pour it in a watering can and you water it all around the perimeter of your tree. You do that this time of year when the trees are leafing out, but that's something you have to do every single year. You can also hire an arborist to come in, and there's things they can inject into your tree. Most of these things would be, if you had a prize ash tree as your foundation planting, you might want to do that. Otherwise, it wouldn't be worth the investment of doing that over and over again.
If you just joined us, you're listening to our two master gardeners, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz, on the Route 51 Garden Show. I'm Glenn Moberg, and this show works best when you call in. We already have wide open phone lines right now, and I'd like to see those lines fill up. Because typically what happens is people start calling in the last 10 minutes of the show, and then we can't get to your question. So we've got two master gardeners who are here to give advice on growing vegetables, flowers, plants, trees, shrubs, just for northern Wisconsin, the northern half of the state. So if you're looking at getting out this long holiday weekend and working in the garden or taking care of some of those landscaping issues, these are the ladies who can help you out. The question you have can be answered at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742. Well, we've had a very wet, cold spring, with the exception of a few days when the temperature got above 70 degrees. What does that mean for people who are looking forward to planting their gardens this weekend?
I think you want to make sure that it's dry enough to plant. So with the wet soil, we're blessed in most of Portage County to have pretty sandy soil, so it dries out quickly. I think in those areas we'll be able to plant. In areas where you have some heavier soil, do the quick test for soil. Take a handful of soil, squeeze it, and see if it crumbles. And if it does, you can your soil's dry enough to plant. If it clumps together, hop in your kayak for the day.
So we may have to put things off for another weekend in some of the wetter parts of the state.
If it's so wet, you're really not losing time by trying to put your seeds in if it's too wet, because they will just rot. So yeah, make sure your conditions are good.
Now, is this cold, wet weather, has it been good for any plants?
It has been. We noticed that a lot of the spring flowers lasted a very long time, whereas if it would have got hot right away, they would have bloomed and been gone. So we have a lot of things. The grass is growing like crazy. So anything that's a grass base. The trees actually are taking up a lot of moisture, which will make them very, very healthy. Even as it gets dry and hot through the rest of the summer, they'll be full of moisture. Their root zones are full of moisture. So that's all been very good. It gave the perennials a good start. You'll see your hostas are beautiful. Your perennial flowers all are very full. A lot of those would struggle if it would have been dry. So yes, we have a nice bank of water. So that's been very good.
Well, let's go to the phones. We are filling up nicely right now. Let's go to Sue in Forest County with some comments or questions about shade ground cover. Sue, you're on Route 51.
Hi, thanks a lot. I appreciate the program, because today I'm heading over to Rhinelander to pick up some of my plants that I'm putting into a brand new planting area. A perennial is what I'm looking for. I think I have some ideas for my shade, but I'm actually looking for some sun perennial ground covers. Sedums, maybe, or any other ideas?
Sedum is a good one for spreading. There are just a whole variety of let me just think. Lamium will grow in sun or shade. There's a sweet woodruff is blooming right now. That's a pretty has a white flower in early spring, and that will spread nicely.
I think your sedums, if you have very, very heavy shade, they come in all different. You can get yellow, you can get red, you can get, you know, and they'll bloom at different colors. Some of them are taller, some of them are smaller, they have bigger leaves. Even things like moss roses, which is an annual, but that's the kind of thing that can take a lot of heavy sun. Mm-hmm. But in your perennials, there's a lot of low-growing perennials that can look pretty in the front. Mm-hmm. Even some lilies that are very low-growing, you know. It just depends on what you want to see. Mm-hmm. You know, read your labels. They'll tell you how tall it gets.
Yeah. There's a geranium, a perennial geranium. Cranesbill is the name that's common. Biokovo, B-I-O-K-O-V-O is a spreading geranium that has kind of just very light pink flowers, and that spreads very nicely. Some of the native geraniums will spread nicely too with bright pink flowers, and they make it a good ground cover.
I also have dianthus, which is sold oftentimes as an annual. But it does come back every year. If you get a really, really brutal winter, it'll die out. But otherwise, it comes back. It's already starting to bloom. It makes a nice clump. Very nice. I also have some flowering kale, which is also an annual. That really looks pretty because it goes way into the fall. It likes it as it gets cooler in the fall. It'll turn a real pretty purple, and that looks real pretty along
the border. Is that edible, the flowering kale?
I don't know.
It is, but if you want to eat kale, there are so many varieties that are edible that are better than that. So Russian kale would be a good one. Just one other suggestion for ground cover: if it is a shady area, vinca is good. Mm-hmm. And I'll note on all ground covers, one of the beauty of ground covers is they do indeed cover the ground. That's also sometimes the challenge because I just wrote about this recently. I call them bullies of the playground because they don't share well. Unless you're planting it near something that will stand up to the aggressive spread, you might lose something. So just be aware of that as you're putting things in.
And of course, what's blooming right now is the phlox, the low growing phlox, mm-hmm. and that's very pretty too in the spring.
All right, well, Sue, you've got a lot of suggestions there. I don't know if you're writing all of this down.
I haven't. Thank you. May I ask just one a question on one? A cotton Easter. Do you have any comments about that? Cotton Easter.
Yeah. So I think of that as more of a shout. Cotonia Easter, I think, is the the way to I think that's a little closer. I might not have it quite right. I always think of that as a shrub, more of a hedging shrub than a ground cover.
I heard it goes 12 inches high and spreads really a lot.
Well, it sounds like a small shrub.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know if that was native.
Sue, thanks so much for the phone call. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And let's go back to the phones, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742 for your gardening and landscaping questions. We have Andrew in Madison who's got a question about the ash borer. Andrew, you're on Route 51.
Oh, yes. Hello. This is Andrew. It's an honor to be here. Excuse me. My question is this. These illegal aliens are invasive species of the ash borer. My rose gardens, I'm worried about them. Are they going to affect it in any way? And should I perhaps build a wall to keep them out?
You know, I intentionally do this show every year so I can take a break from politics, Andrew.
As you might believe is true in other aspects of life, I'm not sure the wall would be effective.
Very, very good. Thank you.
All right, Andrew, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's talk about something that's happening this time of the year, which is morel mushrooms. We've had a lot of wet weather, and the sun is finally out. Is that good for searching for morels?
I believe that it will be. It's been – if it's really what it'll be is good for any kind of molds, fungus, all these things. The morels are in that category. So there are a lot of other – there's chicken of the woods and all these – you know, people hunt for all sorts of mushrooms out in the woods. So we need a little bit of heat. Right now it's been way too cold and too wet, but that'll be the perfect environment because as that organic matter starts to rot, when the heat comes on, all that stuff is going to pop. But you're also going to want to watch – that same thing happening like in your mulch in your yard and things like that. You're going to see mushrooms coming up in your lawn. You're going to see mushrooms coming up in your gardens. And so those are things that, you know, that's all that same process.
Where should people look for morels? I've got a brush pile in my backyard. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, I found morel mushrooms growing there, mm-hmm. much to my surprise a few years ago. And somebody told me that they like ash trees that are decomposing. So there might have been ash branches in the brush pile. I don't know.
Roots may have still been under the ground that are coming. We've always felt they grow by elm trees. That's always been what we've looked for by elms. So we had a dead elm in our back, and sure enough, you know, that was where they come up. And so, but I know that a lot of the there are people that have seed their own mushrooms. You know, there are places online where you can buy the. And plant them yourself. But morels, sadly, are one of those that they just can't get to do that. And so you really have to hunt for them in the wild. They're very knit.
And how do you know you're not going to poison yourself if you go out mushroom hunting?
You have to be very, very careful. You better know what you're harvesting. You have to either know someone who knows and have them teach you. Morels are pretty...
distinctive,
unique, you know, and I think that's why most people enjoy mm-hmm. morels because they're very unique. But some of the other ones are you have to very much know what because they're very similar.
And even with morels, there's a lookalike that is not edible. So if you have access to the internet, I would encourage you to look for that comparison because you'll see just slight differences between morels and this lookalike, the name of which is escaping me right now. But be sure. If you're not sure, don't eat it.
1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Al in Merrill. Al, you're on Route 51.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about planting blueberry bushes. I just bought a couple blueberry bushes, and it did say you're supposed to plant them in full sun. I wanted to plant them on the north side of my house, which would be less sun, wondering if they will grow adequately there. And secondly, what can I do to enhance its production once they're planted?
Okay, once you get out of your sun, then you're going to reduce your crop because they need the sun in order to produce the berries. So if you're on the north side, try to get as far away from your house so you can get the maximum amount of sun that you can get. With blueberries, you're going to have to create an artificial bed to plant them in. Blueberries require a very acid soil, very, very high in organic matter. So what you do is you dig a hole, or a trench is probably the best thing to do. Dig a trench, fill it with peat moss, fill it with leaves, fill it with organic matter. Then you want to put in some type of an acid solution, so a sulfur base, or they have organic acid that you can sprinkle in there. Then you want to plant your blueberries and you want to grow them there. And then you will also water them with like a muir acid or some type of an acid loving fertilizer. So they require that definite, and you'll have to do that every year. Make sure that you keep that acid level up.
You will probably find that it's most effective to prepare your soil well in advance of actually putting the plants in. Some of the sulfur-based products take a while to be absorbed in the soil. So if you can do that early, and even if you keep your plants for another month in their pot, you keep watering them, let it at least get started to work.
Al, may I answer your question?
Yes, would pine needles, that's kind of an acidic mulch, would that enhance the soil?
Yes.
But what they find is if pine needles are too dried out, most of that is already gone. Then they're just organic matter. Fresh pine needles or still green pine needles are much more acidic than something that's dried out that's just laying on the side. So
mulch, and what again would enhance the acidity of the soil?
Peat moss.
Peat moss, okay.
Yes, you can buy those bales. They come at the common store. That's very good for. But leaves, any type of organic
and
matter.
Leaves.
But the peat moss is very much an acid-based thing.
Great.
And then water it, you know, and then – and a lot of the organic acidifiers, you know, they work well without, you know, burning or being quite as caustic as some of the other things.
Can you over-acidify it?
No.
You can't.
Not in Wisconsin, anyway.
All right.
Al, thanks so much for the phone call. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the annual Route 51 Garden Show on Wisconsin Public Radio with Master Gardeners Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz, answering your questions about gardening, taking care of trees and shrubs in our often inclement northern Wisconsin climate. So if you've got a question, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Here's Guy Clark with a song about homegrown tomatoes.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones. Don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forgot all about the sweating and the digging. Every time I go out and pick me a biggin'. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Support for WPR comes from the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, hosting the Energy Fair, June 16th through the 18th in Custer, Wisconsin, with more than 200 workshops and exhibitors focused on sustainability. TheEnergyFair.org. Support also comes from Cats and Barkers in Wausau, a natural pet food store dedicated to helping family pets live long, healthy, and happy lives. CatsandBarkers.com. That's K-A-T-Z-E-N, Barkers.com.
Watch the flowers grow. 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 Watch the flowers grow.
Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, taking us into our next segment of the Route 51 Garden Show with tips for growing flowers, vegetables, trees, and shrubs tailored for north central Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz are standing by waiting for your questions and comments at 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Let's go to Mike in Madison with a question about soil and tomatoes. Mike, you're on Route 51.
Yes, thank you. Here, probably just a week ago, I tilled up my garden and planted my tomatoes and the plants that I had started from seed. And the soil didn't work up quite as nice as what it has in the past. It was a little bit clumpy. I'm wondering if this is going to be detrimental to my tomato plants, or is this just fake news?
There we go again with politics on the Garden Show. Nick, you've got an answer for Mike?
Off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Mike, you might have too much moisture in your soil. If you have already planted them, I would encourage you not to overwater. Can't stop the rain, of course. But just, you know, kind of keep an eye on that. And
right. Once you have your soil bed hasn't, you know, it's clumpy, like you're saying. That's just the way the soil reacted because it was too wet when it was worked up. And so now that it's already planted, you're going to have to watch your tomato plants, because with all the rain is still coming, you know, the blights are going to be around and it's going to be very difficult. You might want to put some kind of a mulch down, like a hay or grass that doesn't have any herbicides in it, or even newspaper, something to keep the splashing of the soil off of those tomato plants to help them get established and get going before we get a lot more of the rain that's coming.
Let's move to Howard in Plover with a question about Asian pears. Howard, you're on Route 51.
Yes, good morning to all of you. I have a question on Asian pears, if they would grow near Plover, Wisconsin.
Do you have any idea what zone they're in?
Four.
I'm a little suspect of something that truly is zone four, an Asian pear. And I say that because we just don't see many around here. So if you really want to give it a try, maybe try it as close to your in a sheltered area, if you have maybe a microclimate where it's a little might be a little warmer in your house, away from the wind.
What happens with a lot of those fruiting plants is you can get them to grow. You'll have a beautiful tree, but mm-hmm. it's not going to ever produce any fruit because the buds will freeze. So where there's fruiting or the bee activity isn't there when they're flowering. And so even though they'll live, you're not going to have what you're seeing, imagining as a beautiful pear tree, because it's just not going to react the same way because it's a little too cold here for them to really thrive. You're better off with a pear tree that's suited to this area, and then you'll be successful and you'll be happier because trees are an investment. And so you want something that's going to do well.
Okay, great. No, I appreciate the advice. You saved me a little bit of money.
Yes. Yeah.
One other tip when you're buying fruit trees of any sort, learn where they were raised. So if you're buying, say 2-year starts, if they were started in Wisconsin, they're much more likely to thrive here than if they came from Georgia.
Okay, good. That's more good advice. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Howard. Now, the climate, ladies and general, is warming. The official U.S. climate maps have moved further north. Areas up north that used to be Zone 3 are now Zone 4. Some of them are even borderline Zone 5. Are you finding that you can grow some trees up north that you couldn't grow before? Lynn, why don't you take that one since you're the expert?
Yeah, I would say that you could maybe 3 out of 4 years. But when we're talking about a tree, we're talking about a 20-year, 25-year lifespan. So all you need is one bad winter, like we had a couple years ago, and then you'll lose the tree, which did happen, I believe it was 2 or 3 years ago. We had that very brutal winter, and a lot of the fruit trees, whole limbs were frozen. And so if you have a borderline tree that's a 4 or a 5, it could be damaged, and then you're losing it. You know, we see that with a lot of peaches. Even around the Madison area, which tends to be a 4 or 5, kind of more on that border,
right.
All those peaches froze out. And they're seeing that with grapevines. It's the same thing. You get that bad spring or a cold winter, and then you lose them.
There are some grapevines that are made especially for northern climates.
Yes.
I grow a variety called King of the North, which is very prolific, and it produces Concord-style grapes that are – they're like the size of large blueberries. They do have seeds in them, but they've been really healthy. They're very tart, though. You know, I'm the only one in the family who can eat them.
Got to make jam.
There's a white variety. I believe it's called White Swenson. It's a lot of these have come out of a Minnesota program that developed a lot of northern grapes, and those have a little seed in them, but they are edible. They're almost like a table grape. They're very good. So yes, my advice would be buy what's from your zone, and then you'll be happy with it every year rather than gambling with an investment.
Let's move to Kathy in Wausau. Kathy, you're on Route 51 with our two master gardeners.
Hi. Last year, my Asiatic lilies were devoured by the red lily leaf beetle
yes.
or bug. I dug them all up last year because there were way too many to try and pick them off or deal with it that way. And there were little bits of lily in those areas that came up again this year, and I dug them out, and there were already bugs there. So I put that soil and plants in plastic bags because I didn't know where to dispose of it since the bugs are still in there.
Right.
Put them in black plastic bags to heat it up and whatever. But what's the news on that? How is there any recommendations?
Just doing what you're doing. Unfortunately, it came in. It is an invasive. What you did was exactly what you should do, is destroy as much of the beetles, the larvae, whatever you can, as you can, to try and prevent the spread. But I know down in Portage County now, I had them on my lily, so it is spreading, sadly. And so it's going to be another one of these invasives that we have to deal with. But I would ask everyone to go out in their garden if they have Asiatic lilies. Right now, the little red, they're red beetles with a black head and black legs. They're very easy to see. Pick off and squish them or throw them in soapy water. Kill off as many as you can because they'll lay 400, 450 eggs. And so you can imagine how the population will explode.
And if you see those eggs, say, on the underside of the leaves, remove those as well because, yes, you'd much rather pick one than 450. Yeah.
Kathy, thanks. Go on.
Yeah, I understand in the Northeast where they are dealing with them quite intensively, they are trying to develop a wasp that would be a predator, would lay its eggs in the larvae.
Right.
Any chance that would get here? We could get that here?
I would say the chance is good, but I don't know that it's here yet. If it becomes effective, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Marathon County has sort of the dubious distinction of being
the ground zero
for for the lily leaf beetle. It was first discovered in the Madison area, I believe, in 14, and now here in Wausau area in 16. So we'll keep watching. Fortunately, your extension agent is on just right on top of this, so I'm sure if there is a wasp, Heather will get the word out about it. So
okay, all right, thank you very much,
Kathy. Thanks so much for the call, and let's go to Gene in Phillips. We'll stay on the subject of fruit trees here. Gene's got a question about apple trees.
Hello.
Hi, Gene.
Hi.
I have an abandoned garden that's fenced in to protect it from deer, and we planted two apple trees in there, and I'm wondering what I should put on the ground around the trees. One of the problems I have is next door there is a raspberry garden, so some raspberries are invading, and from the other side there's quackgrass moving in.
Okay, well, with my apple trees, we're in an abandoned orchard as well. And so I had very high grass, lots of things growing in. And so what we just do is keep it mowed. So we keep it mowed down so the grass, because the grass is just competing for the moisture and the fertility and all that. So the other thing you always want to do is keep it clean. So if you have leaves that drop or apples that drop later on, you want to get those out of there because that's what will make like a disease cycle there. But as far as grass or raspberries or things growing in, they're not really going to hurt the tree. So I would just mow them down and keep the area mowed down so that your trees have a chance. Now, right around the base of your tree, you might want to, you know, pull some of that sod back just in a nice, maybe a foot diameter circle, you know, just on the immediate part of the tree to keep that happy. But farther out, it isn't going to be that imperative.
And I'll just add to that here's why mowing is so effective. If you can take off the growth of any plant, any weed, and you'll weaken it from developing. So you won't necessarily get rid of it. But if you're pulling it out, then you're disturbing the soil and inviting some other things to come in. So as long as you're mowing things down that you don't want, you're weakening their ability to take over the areas where you don't want them. And it's a lot easier.
Gene, thanks so much for the phone call. We really appreciate it. We do have a question from Patricia, who writes on Facebook. Are you aware of any problem with using Allegheny Pachysandra as a ground cover and shade? And Nick, we already covered this pretty extensively with that disease, but any other problems?
Yeah, and it's not that any one is a particular problem, but just be on the lookout for any in the the family is BUX, I believe it's CAE. Look for the Latin name and know that it at least has the potential for a problem. That doesn't mean you have it, but watch for that potential. If you're buying the plant, look very carefully for any brown spots on the leaves before you buy it.
You're listening to the annual Route 51 Garden Show on Wisconsin Public Radio with Master Gardeners Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. I'm Glenn Mobrig. They are answering your questions about gardening in our often inclement northern Wisconsin climate. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. Gene in Hayward and Diane in Eagle River, hang on. We'll get to you right after this short break. Here's Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention with some sound advice for vegetable growers.
Call any vegetable, call any vegetable. Pick up your phone. Call any vegetable, think I'm a vegetable. Call any vegetable. Call any vegetable, call any vegetable. And the chances are good that a vegetable will respond to you. Rutabaga, 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 rutabaga.
Support for WPR comes from La Lingerie of Madison, the appointment-only fit house, featuring a variety of swimwear with sizes 2 through 24, located at 640 West Washington in Madison or lalingerieshop.com. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
Yes, you like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, I like tomato. Potato, potato. Tomato, tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Oh, yes. You like potato.
And you like potato.
Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong, I guess they could be arguing about what to plant in the garden, taking us into the final segment of the Route 51 Garden Show with tips for growing vegetables, trees, shrubs, flowers, all tailored specifically for our sometime inclement northern Wisconsin climate. I'm Glenn Mobrig with our master gardeners Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. 1-800-780-9742. If you've got a question for either of them, that's 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Gene in Hayward, who's been waiting patiently. Gene, you're on Route 51.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Gene, and turn your radio down, please.
You bet. And I am looking to plant flowering perennials in a very sandy soil, on which I have added peat moss and black dirt and worked it in. It's an eastern and southern exposure, and I want to plant the flowering perennials so that there are short ones in the front, medium tall ones in the middle, and tall ones in the back. And I'm wondering if you could give me some suggestions for those heights.
Oh, you're well ahead of the curve already, Gene, with your planning process, and it sounds like you have a great spot for what you want to accomplish. You know, I would encourage you to plant things that are native, because when you have sandy soil in a hot spot, you have the best chance of the roots going deep and thriving. So your coneflowers, cup plant, Joe Pye weed, Queen of the Prairie. Those are all pretty tall.
Those are all native to Wisconsin.
And they're all, I'm so far I've just listed natives. If you like grasses, that's a nice combination. So little blue stem or some of the switch grasses will give you a little bit more height. So that's kind of your back of the border. Here's my quick pitch for natives. You will have more pollinators and more confidence that what you're putting in the ground is going to thrive there because they're native to Wisconsin. So, and birds and butterflies and I think you'll appreciate that. So that's back more of the back of the border. Let me give you a couple other suggestions that have made the perennial of the year list that would do well in full sun. There's something that's just blooming right now called blue star flower Amsonia. That's a nice one. Another native is Baptisia, so false indigo. It'll get to be shrub size. It's just starting to bloom, purple flowers and pink as well.
So what was that one called?
That is Baptisia, B as in boy, A P. And it's false indigo.
Baptisia.
Okay. Yeah, so that's some of the daisies are nice. The panicums, that's the common name that's the botanical name for switchgrasses. You'll find that to be a good addition. So many of the black-eyed Susans, if you like that yellow. Russian sage is another nice one for middle. Front of the border, you could consider Paskflower or Prairie Smoke is a pink.
And again, the hummingbirds and the bees.
Love that.
The butterflies. Bring them in. Jean, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's try to squeeze in at least one more. We have Diane in Eagle River. Diane, you're on Route 51.
Hi. Good morning, Glenn, Lynn, and Nick. I actually have two questions. I'm trying to rejuvenate my lawn. I mean, it is really pretty bad. And also, I have a lot of pine trees and deciduous trees on my property, and everybody is telling me you've got to lime it to death. Is this true?
I wouldn't recommend that, no. To me, lawns are very simple. They like nitrogen. It's a grass. It's never going to flower. It doesn't do anything. And so you just go and buy yourself some nitrogen, which when you're looking at fertilizer, it's the first number. So if you have a 10-0-0, you can get 24-0-0. It's that first number is just the straight nitrogen. That's all you need. You want to mow your grass very high. So set your mower at about 3.5 inches. Keep mowing it high and leave all the clippings on the lawn because you want that organic matter to stay. You're going to build up a nice, soft, organic layer that grass is going to thrive in. And then you're going to give it the nitrogen that it wants to grow, and that's going to start bringing it back. Oftentimes people, if you lime it, you're going to knock your pH so off that nothing's going to grow. And so I would just, it's very simple, just the simple mow high, give it some fertilizer.
And Diane, you had another question?
Yes, I do. I noticed last fall I have two magnificent clumps of variegated hosta. Mm. And believe it or not, they have lost their white outline. What on earth is going on?
All right, now we're down to like our last minute here, so let's have a succinct answer for Diane.
I would say hostas do tend to mutate. Sometimes they will do that. They'll revert back to their original mother plant, and then the variegation will be gone.
No kidding.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, that's terrible.
It doesn't happen often.
And you can't make them go back again, right?
If you have any part of that plant that still has the variegation, keep that and get rid of the rest.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Divided.
Okay.
Up.
Thank you very, very much.
Diane, thanks so much for the phone call. And Amy on Facebook wants to share that the Golden Sands Resource Conservation and Development Council is hosting a Save Your Ash Trees workshop June 3rd. At the Mosquito Hill Nature Center. Now, I believe that's in New London.
It is, yes.
The Mosquito Hill Nature Center, that's June 3rd, a Save Your Ash Tree workshop if you're worried about that emerald ash borer. Ladies, we're completely out of time. Thanks so much for being with us today. And We are going to tiptoe out of here again this year with jazz guitarist Nick Lucas with a song he recorded in 1944.
And if I kiss you in the garden, in the moonlight, will you pardon me? Come tiptoe through the tulips with me.
We want to thank today's guests, Portage County Master Gardener volunteers Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. A reminder that you can read Nick's column, The Perpetual Gardener, in the Portage County Gazette. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Special music today by Eric Clapton, Arlo Guthrie, John McCutcheon, Guy Clark, The Four Seasons, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald, and Nick Lucas. Next week on Route 51, that's Thursday, June 1st, 2017, the 50th anniversary to the day that the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's album changed our musical and cultural landscape. We'll be talking about that and looking at Beatles collectibles and what they're worth today with Paul Kennedy of Krause Publications of Iola and Noah Fleischer, the author of The Beatles, Fab Finds of the Fab Four. Reminder to follow us on Facebook. If you missed part of this show, you can hear it again Friday evening at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we are heading out of town.